part of flyover country. This is Spin Sold Separately.
I know. I said I wasn't going to record again before the election, but I just can't help myself. Just a couple more things that came up today and felt like they were worth talking about for a minute or two. This will just be a short, quick episode here. How you feeling? How you feeling about tomorrow? I've been using the phrase cautiously optimistic, which I think that's how both sides are feeling right now. It's just so hard to tell what's going to happen. I think it's completely up in the air. I saw two polls today from what I'm being told have been fairly accurate polls compared to the rest in recent years. It was an Iowa poll. One of them showed Harris up 3. Now, mind you, Trump has carried Iowa the last 2 years fairly comfortably. One showed Harris up 3. The other showed Trump up 10. How do you even square with that? I honestly have no idea what to expect. I look at that coalition of Trump, Tulsi, Elon, RFKJ. I want this group to have a chance. I wanted to highlight, I brought it up how, cross-party this unlikely coalition is, but I kind of thought of something today that I wanted to share with you guys. I voted for Trump in 2016. I mean, it came to me fairly early in that race that Hillary was just not a candidate I could support, and the deplorables comment sealed the deal for me. And like I said, I was looking forward to a DC outsider, which in 2016, Trump certainly was. So I vote for Trump in 2016. 2020, ultimately, I ended up voting for Trump again. But I remember watching those first couple of Democrat debates during their primary. And Tulsi always caught my attention, even though, it was very clear early on, she just wasn't getting the support that she was going to need. She was polling in the single digits, and it was never going to be her race, I guess. She was never going to be the nominee. But when I heard her speak, what she said always kind of made sense to me, 80, 90% of it. And I just couldn't figure out why she wasn't polling better. Because I'm looking at her going, if this ends up as knowing that it wasn't going to happen, but if this ended up as a race between Trump and Tulsi, I could be talked into Tulsi. I could vote for Tulsi Gabbard. And then fast forward to 2024, when RFKJ was let out of the information blackout prison that he was in for a very long time, largely by, I keep going back to this name, but there's a reason I do it, spending two consecutive 2-hour shows with Megyn Kelly when very few other people would platform him. He had some very heterodox views on, and still does to this day, on vaccines and with COVID and, stuff that's in our water supply and different food additives that are less than ideal for human consumption. And I've actually listened to a couple podcasts on that with some very reputable people in that industry, and it is fascinating. And RFKJ brought this stuff to the surface. He's very left on some issues that I don't go all the way down the road with him on. But again, he just speaks in a different way. He doesn't talk like the stereotypical DC politician, which I'm sorry, that's kind of how Kamala comes off to me, is just another, I'll be the president for everyone and hopes, dreams, and aspirations. And he talks about different things, and he made us think about food and the food industry and how tied in with the government and how tied in with Big Pharma and all these kind of incestuous relationships between these institutions that should be checks and balances on each other. And in the end, end up being quite the opposite. and kind of just scratching each other's backs and approving each other's agendas, and everybody's making money hand over fist. And RFK kind of came forward and said, you know, this isn't okay. What's being added to our food has been banned in dozens of other Western nations. And you have to start asking yourself, well, why? Why is stuff banned in Sweden, Finland, and Great Britain, but not here, even though it's made by the same company? You know, their version of Fruit Loops over there is quite different from ours. But it's the additives that go in and the colorings. And anyway, we'll get into this in much greater detail. Hopefully, if Trump is able to pull this out, I want this team to have a chance. With RFK getting into the food industry and Elon going after government waste and Tulsi getting in there and fixing things once and for all for our veterans, and Trump with one more term, I want to see this happen so badly. My reason for jumping on here real quick, I've already kind of gone off on tangents here, but I mentioned in episode 4 that I wanted to do a little thing called Worst of Both Worlds. And then, as you could tell, I was so worked up yesterday. Oh, I was so worked up and so fired up yesterday that I hammered that out and basically said, okay, that's enough. You know, I'm done till after the election. Make sure everybody gets out and votes. And then I completely forgot to do that. So what I meant by worst of both worlds, because, of you know, one side loves to demonize the other and talk about all the awful, horrible things that are in their heart and what they're going to do if given the power of the presidency. And, well, I wanted to kind of expand on that just a little bit here. Let's assume the worst case scenario for both of these candidates, and let's kind of explore for a minute what that would look like. Now, let's say, for the sake of argument, that Donald Trump in this second term is absolutely everything the left says he's going to be. The wannabe dictator, we'll never have another election, and he's going to turn the military on people that don't vote for him, and he's going to imprison political opponents and all this nonsense that the left accuses him of holding deep in the recesses of his heart. But let's just say for a second that's all true. Every last bit of it. The resistance that Donald Trump already faces in Washington, D.C. is unlike most presidents or candidates have ever faced in that town. He is the outsider. Even after being president, he's not one of them. He doesn't want to be one of them. He detests lobbyists. He detests that administrative state, that quote-unquote deep state, the bureaucracy. He hates it all, and it all hates him right back. If he goes to D.C. and tries to do what the left claims he's going to do, how far do you think he's reasonably going to get? To change our elections to just not have them anymore would obviously require amendments to the Constitution, which is I'm not going to get into the process here. We will explore it in the future, but trying to keep this one short. It's a very, very tedious process that requires ample amounts of almost unanimous support between the houses of Congress, getting it okayed by the Supreme Court, and then getting the approval of a vast majority of the states. None of that would happen. None of that would happen if he went in there and said, okay, I won this election, we're all done. No more elections. I am president forever, and J.D. Vance is going to take over after me and carry on my legacy. That would have so many legislative, judicial, and all other kinds of resistance and impediments to it. It would never, ever happen. And the people espousing this on the left know that. But anyway, again, we're trying to assume the worst here. Sending the military after people that didn't vote for him. You know, like if you're a Kamala voter, one day, you know, next March, you're going to wake up and...
Hello, I know you're in there. I've got the voting record right here. You didn't vote for me. You didn't vote for me. I said you needed to vote for me. Time to go to the concentration camp.
It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. And what they keep referring to is the interview in which he even talked about bringing out the military. He was responding to a question from a reporter where the reporter was talking about a comment that was actually made by Joe Biden. and this is a few weeks ago now, Biden was talking about how he's concerned there could be unrest on election night. And this reporter asked Trump about it. And Trump basically said, you know, hey, none of that's going to come from anybody voting for me. Anybody supporting me, none of that, there's going to be no violence from them. But, you know, if any kind of unrest comes up, and, you know, it was a longer answer than I'm going to give it here. But he basically said, well, yeah, if things get out of hand on election night, I mean, we can't have that. So, yeah, you'd have to bring out the National Guard. And if that wasn't enough, yes, you'd have to bring out the military. Well, number one, he's not in charge right now. If things go sideways tomorrow night in cities across the country, he has no power. He has no position of authority right now. Any order regarding the National Guard or the military would have to come from Joe Biden. So the fact that he was even talking about it was in response to a question in regards to a comment made by Joe Biden. He didn't just start talking about, I'm going to send the military after everybody that doesn't vote for me. And nothing of the sort. Imprisoning political opponents. I get the biggest kick out of how the left talks about this as if they're not doing it to him right now. It is gaslighting of the highest order. But they look right into that camera and talk about it like, can you believe he might come after his political opponent? Can you believe that in the United States of America? It's like, yeah, no, we really can't believe it. We've been watching it for the last 2 years. Still can't believe it. The gaslighting is so strong. And here it was again today, a little sidetrack here. Joe Scarborough of MSNBC fame has his panel on whatever. I don't know if it was, you know, he's the morning, one of the morning show hosts. I don't know if it was the morning show or whatever. He was on a panel, or I just saw a clip of it. And there he was, even today, after all of this demonizing of Trump and his voters and half the country and the open disdain that these people have for people like me. Here he was again today asking about how Trump voters, he very specifically said Trump voters, how we were raised. Like nobody, his comment was, nobody was raised like that in my neighborhood growing up. And of course, then he diverts into the, you know, middle class. It wasn't enough that we're garbage. Well, apparently now our parents are garbage too, you know, vicariously through us, because we grew up capable of voting for a retrobate like Donald Trump in the eyes of Joe Scarborough. These people are so reprehensible and so aloof and so disconnected from reality with their $3 or $4 or $8 million a year jobs sitting behind a desk insulting half the country. Screw you guys, honestly. This is episode number 6. Well, 5.5. It's not going to be a full one, but never once have I demonized a left voter. Never once. I've gone after their policies. I've gone after their high-level politicians and their power structure. And I've made it very clear that my disdain is laser-focused on the legacy media. Yes, that includes you, Joe Scarborough. I have nothing against anyone that is voting against me. I might not understand it. I certainly don't agree with it. I think they're misguided. I think they aren't quite thinking it through all the way. They're smart people. Okay, there's people in my life that are absolutely, if they haven't already, voting, either already voted for or will be voting for Kamala and straight Democrat right down the ticket. These aren't bad people. I love some of these people. They're not bad people. We disagree. That's what it comes down to. I might think that some of them are a little misinformed. That doesn't make them bad people. And I wouldn't sit on a national broadcast and question their upbringing. Screw you, Joe Scarborough. How were these people brought up? So, okay, yes, it wasn't enough to insult us. Now you're insulting our families and our parents. These people are really, really good at isolating people in very, very large numbers by being so pompous, so arrogant, so smug, and so completely disconnected from what's really happening throughout this country. So I had to get that out there. So, worst of both worlds. So Trump, if he goes in there with the mentality that the left says he's going to, he's not going to get anywhere anyway. he can be impeached. He can be if he does any of that stuff, he will be impeached, and he won't be acquitted by the Senate this time. They'll convict him, and he'll be removed from office if he does any of that stuff. That is the beauty of all these guardrails that our governmental structure provides. You know, the ones we've talked about that the Democrats want to rid our government of. Yeah, all those guardrails are exactly the features of our federal government that would keep a rogue president, like they think Trump is absolutely going to be, from ever being able to pull off all these horrible things that they say he's going to try to do. So before you decide to blow up the Senate or get rid of the filibuster or completely make irrelevant the Supreme Court, you might want to think twice, because those are the very features, the very unique features of our federal government that would keep any kind of rogue executive from getting that far out of line. Now, on the flip side, if we get the worst possible version of Kamala Harris, were she to win, this one makes me far more nervous. She ran as an uber-progressive California Democrat in 2019. She has not distanced herself from any of those positions in any kind of meaningful way. If she were to get into office and had the worst of intentions, she has the support of the DC administrative class. She has the support of the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. She has the unwavering support of the legacy media that would defend her at every possible turn. That's one thing I've kind of forgot to mention is, can you imagine the legacy media resistance to Trump if he does go rogue, which he won't? But if in their wet dream fantasies, if that's what actually happened, can you imagine the media coverage? Oh my goodness. But on the Harris side of this, if she goes equally as rogue, but in the other direction, I'm not sure our legacy media would react the same way. I think they'd defend it. I think half the stuff wouldn't get reported at all until somebody, you know, figured it out 2 years later that, oh my goodness, they passed this 2 years ago. Why didn't I hear about that? Well, it's because you watch NBC. You know, I tried to tell you, but she would have the support of the media. She would have the support of the bureaucracy. She'd have the support of the DC lifer class. She would have the support of the Department of Education. She'd have the support of our universities. She would have the support of just about every facet of our government, save for, at least as it currently sits, the Supreme Court. Now, the problem is, the left has already made it clear they don't much care what the Supreme Court has to say because they've already delegitimized it in their own minds. They've already just stated as fact that it is irrelevant because it is controlled by conservative-leaning justices, which apparently in their minds means they don't have to listen to it. You've seen it with the student loan forgiveness. The Supreme Court themselves stopped him in his tracks with this complete handout, complete pandering, handing out money for votes. They stopped him in his tracks and said, the president does not have the authority to spend this kind of money on his or her own. This kind of expenditure has to be taken on through Congress and then approved by the president. Well, Joe Biden didn't care. He pushed it through anyway, and it's happened in violation of the Supreme Court, saying that this was unconstitutional. The president does not have this kind of authority. So the precedent's already been set that the president can basically look at the Supreme Court and say, whatever. You don't think Kamala would double down on that if she knew she had the backing of not only the 93% Democrat base in D.C., but also the entire administrative state, the entire D.C. bureaucracy, and the entire legacy media? What's to stop her? She's got it all. If she gets in and has the worst of intentions, there's nothing to stop her because that D.C. bureaucracy agrees with her. So there are the two stark differences, the worst of both worlds. If you get a rogue Trump, he goes nowhere and probably gets impeached. Nothing gets through. Or at least he's rendered powerless for the duration of his second and final term. If Kamala gets in there and goes rogue, she's got 8 years of unimpeded, unchallenged power with the full power of, well, whatever power they have left, at least, of the legacy media behind her. That scares me more than anything that a rogue President Trump in a second term would ever be able to pull off. So that was the worst of both worlds I wanted to talk about. You know, if either one of these wins and goes in there and does the worst imaginable things, how far could they legitimately get? And to me, there is no comparison. Kamala Harris is far more dangerous in rogue form than Donald Trump ever possibly could be. Donald Trump is not a perfect human being. I am going to go to the polls tomorrow and very excitedly cast my ballot for him. I get it. If there's anybody on the fence still out there, at this point, I don't know how many there are. But if there's anybody on the fence out there, I get it. I understand the hesitation. I understand the resentment. I understand the inability to get past some of the drawbacks of Donald Trump. The crassness, the personal vendettas, the inability to handle criticism. But part of that is what makes him such a strong leader for our country. He's not going to let us get pushed around. He didn't in his first term. He wouldn't in a second. But I understand the drawbacks. I want everyone, anyone that's still on the fence, that isn't suffering from TDS, I just want you to understand what's at stake and how bad things could get if an uber-organized, uber-motivated, and uber-left-wing administration gets in there with the full support of the media and everyone in D.C. and the universities. That scares me far more than, you know, getting a 2 a.m. tweet that's going to make me cringe. I understand the hesitation to vote for him. He has made a lot of enemies. I understand the hesitation. I really do. And like I've said, I've had to be convinced not once, not twice, but three times to vote for him. And yeah, I might have voted for Tulsi in 2020. I might have voted for RFK this time. Well, they're both on his team. I get to vote for all three of them at once. And I get Elon Musk thrown in there as a bonus. This is such a strong team. This is such a diverse team. I pray that this team will get a chance to really make a difference in this country, to get us on a sustainable path that treats its veterans like they deserve to be treated, that cleans up our food supply so that we aren't all sick and aching, with a leaner, trimmer federal government that maybe we can make financially feasible for the future instead of just endlessly running multi-trillion dollar debts every year. You know that's not sustainable. That's going to come to a head someday if we don't fix it. We can't just pretend like that's okay. That's obviously not going to end well, and I think that time is coming sooner than later. I mean, $35 trillion, I think it's 36 now. How far can we go? Elon Musk bought Twitter, went in and cut 80% of its staff, and you can't even tell. I want him to have that chance. I want all of these together to have a chance to really take this country in a whole new and positive direction. With a secure border, a strong military, well taken care of veterans, a healthier food supply, a leaner federal government, lower taxes. We really need to get this one right, folks. I'm feeling pretty good about it, but you just never know. So please, if you have not gotten out there to vote, make sure you get out there. I am going tomorrow as soon as I get off of work. I cannot wait. And then I'm going to come back home and plant my you-know-what on the couch. Turn on YouTube and watch Megyn Kelly from 7 o'clock until, well, hopefully we get an answer. I certainly hope that comes tomorrow. Good Lord, we don't need 4 or 5 days of this with ballot boxes being found in all these random places. We don't need that. Boy, do we need to fix our elections once and for all. Anyway, thanks, guys. Had to get that stuff out. This will be, now I actually promise, for real this time. This is the last one before the election. But we will get into the election results as soon as there is enough available to talk about, whether that's a couple days, 3 days, who knows. I pray it's tomorrow night, where they call it at 10:30 after Arizona and Nevada close, and they get called for Trump, and we can lock this thing up and start moving forward and not have to wait days for a result. That's my hope. I don't really think it's going to happen, but, you know, that's my hope, dream, and aspiration. Anyway, one last appeal. Make sure you get out and vote. Don't be a jerk. Pray for our country. And I'll talk to you next time.